Hi there. Welcome to Service Notes. I'm your host, Reena Brambat. And if you have ever wondered what really happens behind the scenes in IT service management, well, you're in the right place. We're talking tech, transformation, and the occasional, oh no, the system is down moments. Expect real experts and maybe a little fun along the way. Whether you're deep into IT service management or just curious, grab a coffee or water will do. And let's dive in. Hit that play button. Let's do this. Welcome back to another episode of Service Notes, the podcast where we dive deep into journeys of service management professionals from their first ticket into leading transformations. I'm Reena, and I'm truly excited to introduce a guest whose story is a masterclass in growth, greed, and power of service-minded leadership. Joining me today is Karen Brush, an accomplished service management leader who currently serves as head of service management at her organization. What makes her journey truly inspiring is how it all started in a junior role as a service level manager. She navigated the complexities of starting out as service level manager into, you know, performing various service management roles and managing customers' expectations. In these interviews, we will hear how Karen built her career, the key moments that shaped her leadership style, and how she raised the bar for service management teams. Karen, welcome to Service Notes, and we are so thrilled to have you here.
I have one question for you, because you've spent considerable amount of time in service design. What if someone were to ask you the difference between an architect and process designer? How would you differentiate? Because I see that like kind of an overlap where when there is a new project, new technology, you have architects. But I don't think anyone kind of thinks about recruiting a process manager.
So there's several different roles in there. So obviously the traditional architect is more on the technical, so they're designing the actual solution. Then you have a service architect who, well, there's quite a lot of variety of what people see the service architect role being. Mm-hmm. But they play a holistic role. Their role is to design how we're going to manage this thing. It's the best way to describe it. So that obviously includes understanding the technology, but more importantly, who's going to support it? Which vendors are we using? Do we know what the key scenarios are that would drive a major incident for the customer? How would we respond to that? What are all the processes that we need to use? Exactly to your point. How are we going to monitor this thing? What do we need to report on? So it goes into a really extensive view. It has a very big overlap with business analysis, because both look at the what's traditionally called non-functional requirements, what I would call service requirements, and they work together very closely. So a service architect will work closely with the technical architect to make sure that you've got that full functional and service provision. The role of the process person is absolutely fundamental, but again, you've got two sides of that. So you've got the operational processes, so all your traditional incident, problem, change, all of that that you have to do as part of providing a service. But then you've also got the business and customer touch points. So how will the customer interact with us as a provider? Or if you're, you know, if you are a customer organization, how do our business units need to interface with us as IT? So you don't necessarily map the entire process.
Right.
You map the touch points. You know, so it's more like a value stream, really, than a process. And the trick, I think, that a lot of organizations are still learning is how to knit what I would call business readiness, so that customer touch points, with operational readiness into a cohesive service design. I think that's come about because in the industry there was a lot of talk about business service lines and business readiness, which was tended to be done in the project delivery business world. And then you've got operational readiness that tended to be done in the IT world. The reality of now that we, you know, many organizations follow agile practices, utilizing DevOps techniques, is that they're not separate anymore. You know, business and operational readiness is absolutely knitted together. So you need to have those capabilities of process architect, service architect, mm-hmm. and, you know, others. And it's more about, I would say, more about capability these days. It's not so much about job role,
mm-hmm.
right? So I've got service architects who know how to do process maps and value streams.
Right.
And if there isn't anybody available to do it, they can.
Right.
You know, so it's a different way of working, I think, these days that organizations are starting to wrestle with and start changing their operating models a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
So, oh my God, Karen, I so appreciate your insight. And then when you talked about business, you know, processes, relationship, business line, what comes to mind is a business continuity. And obviously, I think mm-hmm. last week there was an event at Heathrow Airport. You know, what are your thoughts, I guess, because you've been in this space for, you know, considerable time. What did you make of it?
So I did a little bit of digging myself. I've learned a healthy disrespect for journalism over the years, that they tend to go for the sensational response. There's always a story behind it, obviously. So what do we know? We know that there was a fire at a substation and that Heathrow made the decision not to run. Now, in fact, Heathrow did have sufficient power to operate, that they could have flown. They had sufficient to run air traffic control. Everything was there, available, but there was no fallback position mm-hmm. while this substation was offline. And that was a risk they weren't prepared to take. So this goes back to what I was saying about understanding the context, and business resilience for me is absolutely key. And I talk about power of two, power of three, power of four. Mm-hmm. So what I'm meaning by that is, as things stand, Heathrow have two ways of powering the airport, right? So okay. if there's a problem with one, they can just flick to the other, no issues, and you know they can rely on different things. But if they lose one of them, they no longer have any resilience. They are running at the risk that something else could happen. So what would have happened if they'd had loads of planes in the air, there was a fire going on at the substation, and suddenly there was a power cut that fed the air traffic control centre actually within Heathrow. Most of it is done outside of the airport area. They wouldn't have been able to know where anything was. It would have all been done just on, they'd have had to have diverted every single plane.
Right.
So this is what they have to take into account, that yes, they could have run the service and they upset huge numbers of customers. You know, some had to go to Gatwick, some had their flights cancelled, some had to sleep at Heathrow and wait for the next day. And of course, it's not just the next day. Everything takes time to roll forward. But that was less risk and less of an issue than the risk of not being able to see where planes are.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing, you know, it's all understanding that context. So the bit that frustrates me is, although Heathrow management actually articulated this, that got reported in a tiny little one-liner on local news, never made national news or any of the online streaming newspapers.
Yeah.
Because the sensation was Heathrow is shut because of a fire. How come they didn't have enough power? You know, so it's we need to be really careful that we understand the reality, but Heathrow's business model is sound, right? Now, the only thing I would say is, well, why don't you have the power of three?
Right.
Because if then there is a fire at the substation there, you've still got two. So having worked in financial services, I can't speak for all of the financial service organisations, but if we talk about the big six, you can guarantee that there are at least three ways of powering their payments platform, you know, of running it. They're not going to rely on just two because it's too high a risk. You know, the volume of payments that they're processing, they can't afford for that to happen. So that's what I'm meaning by power of three. It just and in the cloud provisioning world, you've got the same capability of within let's say within the London zone, for example, one of the London zones, you'll have three availability zones within it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's power of three, but it's still within one area now.
Yeah.
You know, it's still London. So you could say, okay, well, we're going to use that, but then we're also going to use Dublin.
Right.
And use the two together. So you've got that ability that if there's a major problem in London, actually, it's not going to affect you because it just goes to Dublin. So it's that way of thinking about business resilience in the way that you design service. And that for me is a fundamental capability that is often missed, because it goes back to, of course, everybody's worried about what does the technology do for me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how does it make my life easier? And often forget about, and what if it doesn't work for an extended period of time? Yeah. Or, you know, and we've seen some crackers, haven't we? You know, where companies haven't done sufficient change impact assessment on what they're going to do. So the wonderful, the name of the company's gone out of my head, who did the security updates for Microsoft.
Yeah, the CrowdStrike.
Thank you.
CrowdStrike. Very famous last year.
Yeah, they actually said, no, we don't do release management. And you're like, okay, and you expect it to never have a problem?
Yeah.
You know, if you don't understand the impact of what you're doing, or you don't have that checks and balances in your development into production, guess what? Stuff like this is going to happen.
Right.
And it could ruin your business.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and I think what I'm hearing is this is not something you are going to get in day one of your job, but I think it will require years of experience and strategic thinking when you put this kind of plans together, right? Because you kind of, you have to think long term, you have to think about worst case scenario. And I mean, I like to think it comes with experience. It's not something you kind of just get it in your, no matter what you have studied.
Yeah, they're definitely, experience does play a massive part. I've been really lucky over the years that I've had technical people who, I think back to my role in utilities, there was one guy who worked for HP who every now and then would come to me and say, you need coffee. Okay, I need coffee. And he'd take me off and he'd draw me a diagram that showed how something should work and what wasn't working.
Right.
So, although I've never been technically trained, I've learned a lot over the years from people who tell me I need coffee and do me drawings.
Right.
And that now means that I can read an architecture diagram and understand what it's saying, despite the fact I've not been taught that.
Right.
So there's definitely, using your network is really powerful, particularly if you're in this kind of role. But I did go into the local secondary school when they were doing a careers fest, and they were asking me, you know, what are the best subjects, you know, if you could go back, what would you do? And I said, well, you know, my degree is history and politics in social sciences, which on the face of it has got nothing to do with what I do now. Actually, politics has a lot to do with what I do now. In all of the thinking and the analysis and the whys and wherefores, just the research skills that you develop during politics or political thought or whatever. But the biggest thing I said to them was business studies absolutely is a really good grounder, because you get to learn about the whole business if you do business studies.
Right.
So you get an appreciation for everything from business to marketing to HR to finance to, you know, yes, at a very limited level.
Right.
Even at A level, it's probably apprenticeship level four, probably. But because you're learning a holistic way of looking at things, that bodes you well going into service management.
Right.
Of course, you could do computer studies. Of course, you could, because that gives you the technical insight. But for me, business studies actually if I'd been able to do that at school, I probably would have done it. I did do a bit of economics when I went to university. Part of my degree, I did some economics and some stats as well.
Okay.
Both of which are useful. So for service management when you're doing reporting, analyzing, root cause analysis, all of that, even in process health. So, those Six Sigma lean statistical disciplines all are useful. So lots of different skills, really. I'm a big campaigner for getting service management into schools, because it's and it's not really even taught at university. So no. I've done a couple of during lunch breaks sessions at the local school, and I actually, in my role as chair of IT Service Management Forum, I penned a response to the Department of Education on the revision of the computer science GCSE, advocating for learning about service management, even if it's just as an optional module that you could do.
Yeah, when are you going to Parliament to present a bill?
Yeah, but there was one experience that my eldest son had when he was, I think he was 11, he was still in primary school. Mm-hmm. Our local Chamber of Commerce wanted to create an app for tourism in our market town.
Okay.
And they asked the local Coder Dojo, which is a coding group, if they were interested in helping, and my son happened to be part of it.
Okay.
So they had to come up with an app. And it had to be something we could go on Google Play or Apple Store. Mm-hmm. So they used the requirements, they built something, they presented it and said, does this look like it's going in the right direction? Mm-hmm. They got feedback from Chamber of Commerce, they did it a bit more, and then they presented a prototype mm-hmm. that showed how it would work. And Chamber of Commerce were like, that's brilliant. It did actually get promoted to Google Play and Apple Store.
Wow.
And I said to my son, you've just learned, you now know more about service management than many people starting out in the profession.
Yeah.
What you've just done is you've taken it from requirements from the customer right through to delivering it.
Yeah.
And I said, there's many people who've never experienced that before they come into IT. And even if they've been in IT for years, it's not instinctive to always check in with the customer.
Yeah, but you do know he's taking after you, right?
Yeah.
He's heard you on your calls.
I said, that's just an amazing experience that you've had that will stand you in really good stead.
Yeah.
I'd love to get more about service management into schools. It's just because my experience is you bring in a grad who's very knowledgeable, very skilled, but you have to take them from scratch in service management.
Yes, yes.
And that wastes so much time. I mean, I'm not saying I don't like doing it. Of course I like doing it, but it's like it would be great if they'd at least done something, and then you're not starting from scratch every time you bring somebody
in. Yes, absolutely, absolutely. That brings us to end of this part of our conversation. If you've enjoyed this discussion, please feel free to join us next time as I continue discussing with Karen her career journey, her leadership style, her insight into service management. Please make sure you hit the subscribe button whenever you get podcast. And if you've really enjoyed this episode, feel free to share with your peers, colleagues, networks, and friends. Thank you for tuning in to Service Notes. I'm Reena, and I will see you in the next one. This episode of Service Notes is sponsored by 24 Trainings. Check out their service management training classes at www.24trainings.com.